And welcome back in to GameDaySportsRadio.com on a Tuesday morning after the Labor Day holiday. First full weekend of college football. And we've got Mike Bernard from OTM Sports joining us now. We're going to take a look back at a few games. Mike, how was your Labor Day?
Labor Day was good. Nice, calm day. A few baseball games, only one football game to handicap, so it was a good day. How was yours?
Oh, it was great because I did absolutely nothing. That constitutes a great day for me this time of the year. Again, first full weekend of college football in the books now. Of course, we'll have you back on a little bit later in the week. We're going to talk about some NFL and some college, but let's just take a look back at the weekend it was. And right out of the gate, we had an upset. First big upset of the year, I think. Well, a lot of people don't think so. Maryland 34, Texas 29. The Terps, with all the turmoil that's going on there at Maryland, they still get the win. And I think a lot of this had to do with those players hearing for the past year, oh, y'all looked up against Texas out in Austin. You know, you wait till they come to see you. I think that had a lot to do with it. And, of course, the death of offensive lineman Jordan McNair back during the summer. There were a lot of emotion around this game for Maryland, and they played at a high level on Saturday.
Oh, they sure did, and there's no question it was an absolute underdog situation here and an upset because Texas opened 8.5, and Coach, that was earlier in the summer, and once all the turmoil started happening and DJ Durkin was put on leave, the line went from Texas favored by 8.5 to up to 13, and it closed between 12 and 13, so Maryland won the game outright, and Matt Canada showed that he's got what it takes to lead a team in those kids, and they had a lot to play for that day.
It's going to be tough for them to stay up on that emotional high. There's got to be a dip, and I think that's where we're going to see what type of head coach Matt Canada is. If he can keep these Maryland Terps, you know, again, they've had trouble over the last several years. If he can go 500 this year, I think that's a successful season for them. But you look at Texas – listen, Mike, I don't know how Vegas looks at things, but from a coaching standpoint, I look at the quarterback position at Texas. Since Colt McCoy left, Texas has not had a quarterback. They've always had the hotshot recruit come in, and Sam Ellinger, he was going to be the next greatest thing since sliced bread. He's been a turnover machine his first year and one game at Texas. He was 21 of 39, 263 yards, had two touchdowns, but also two interceptions, and one right there at the end of the game that sealed the victory for the Terps.
Right. I think the biggest issue with Texas is you have Mack Brown players going to Charlie Strong. I believe that was the sequence, and then it was Charlie Strong players going to Tom Herman, and I just think they've got so many different systems and so many different kids that don't mesh.
You could be right there. I think that this Texas team, though, I think that we talk about identity. I don't think this Texas team has an identity, and I believe they don't have an identity because they don't have any on-the-field leadership. Let's move to Alabama. Alabama got by Louisville easier. Well, yeah, that's what it was. It was an easy game for the Tide. 51-14. After all the smack talk that Louisville's been doing the last 4 to 6 weeks, you'd have thought this would have been a more competitive game. But Alabama just really dominated from start to finish. Louisville didn't see the scoreboard till after the game was decided.
Right. And the trash talking, it was whistling in the dark. And Petrino alluded to it. He says, look, we have to think, talk, and believe like we can win, and that's how I saw that. But the other thing I take away from this game is in season openers, do not bet against Alabama because they've blown out all those teams, Michigan, Wisconsin, USC, Louisville, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, and the openers, they can't set the line high enough. Remember, this line was 24, and Alabama won by 37.
And let's also remember that these teams don't count Louisville out just yet as far as ACC and having a good season, because all those teams that you mentioned that Alabama mopped up week one, a lot of those teams came back to win 10, 11 games that year.
Right. Well, USC ended up being Rose Bowl champions after Alabama beat them 52-6, I believe. I think Wisconsin went on to win their division in the Big Ten when Alabama beat them 35-17. So you're right. It's these teams aren't done, but they come out right out of the gate and get tested. But the point is, every opening game for Alabama, the line looks inflated, and it is, but don't play against them.
Chick-fil-A kickoff classic right here in Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Auburn 21, Washington 16. The big takeaway from this game, Mike, is that Auburn's defense is exactly what we thought they were going to be. That defensive front is spectacular. Six trips into the red zone for Washington and only 16 points.
Right, and Coach, remember the theme or the narrative that you and I focused on was the point spread was saying Washington's going to win or play Auburn close, and thanks in part to Gus going for two on the very first touchdown, that line was Auburn winning by two, Washington winning by one. Auburn did pull away in cover, and that was a good thing for our clients because that's who we had. But most of the time I listened to the point spread. In this game, I went with what I felt was a better team in a good situation. But Washington, I think they're going to have a real struggle to get back in the playoff picture because all of the focus nationally was, hey, this is going to be the game that everyone's going to point to say the Pac-12 is worthy or not.
Perfect example right there when you put all your eggs in one basket. Now, again, if it's Washington, I think that you can have a USC, you can have a Stanford that runs the table, and I don't think that this Washington loss will affect them quite that much as far as from the national perspective, especially if Washington goes on to have a decent season and Auburn continues to have a good season. I think they can overcome that, but if Washington runs the table and wins the Pac-12, I think this game could come back and haunt them from a perception standpoint.
It could, but as you talked about the teams from the South, if they go into that Pac-12 title game with one loss or undefeated and look really strong, and Washington, you know, lays the wood to them, I think they could be back in the picture, but they will not get in over a team that's seemingly equal from the Big Ten or the SEC.
Jeremy Pruitt's debut for the Tennessee Volunteers, playing West Virginia there in Charlotte, and it was all Mountaineers, 40-14.
Right, and the one thing I had to say about this game is when you and I discussed it earlier in the week was it was a no play for us because there were too many unknowns. But one thing that I did know is that if Holgorsen could run the score up, he would, and he did. Because, and it's not to be a jerk, it's just the fact they're so tired, they being Big 12 coaches, of hearing about Big 10 and especially the SEC, and Holgorsen's gone out. He's going to schedule these top teams right out of the gate. And when he has a chance to make a mark and on the public's mind and make a statement, he's going to do it. And he did it against the Volunteers.
And it helps when you have a Heisman Trophy type quarterback in Will Grier, 25 of 34, 429 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, and he's got weapons, and the West Virginia defense showed up well. They struggled at times last year, and we don't know what Tennessee's going to become, but the first game out of the gate, it looked pretty much like the same as last year, except they did look more disciplined and a little more composed than they did last year.
I agree with you there. You look at the total yardage, though, West Virginia 547, and I just went back and eyeballed it a little bit until right there at the end of the game when things were kind of just going back and forth and they were just playing out the string there. West Virginia already had right at 500 yards of total offense. At that point, Tennessee just had a tad over 200. Yes, that Mountaineer defense did show up. We had talked about the one upset that we had early in the day. We almost had a second, and this would have been the upset of the week, probably the season, with Appy State going into Happy Valley and the number 10 Nittany Lions needing overtime to get by the Mountaineers 45-38.
Right. Appalachian State looked great. They played well in special teams, had a kickoff return for a touchdown. They held Penn State's offense in check. I believe the halftime score was 10 apiece. Mm-hmm. It was very low scoring, and so they did gave up some points in the second half, but they had the lead, forced Penn State to score inside of 2 minutes to get it to overtime.
No doubt about this. Penn State, they were looking forward to this week's matchup with Pitt, and it almost cost them.
Right, and look, you can't sleep on these Sun Belt teams. Go back and look at what they do early in the season and in the bowl games against bigger teams. They show up, they compete, especially early in the season before the injury attrition takes place. Appalachian State, they're a good, solid team. To go into Happy Valley like that and perform at that level, I was impressed.
And don't forget, it was, 25 years ago to today that the 1AA Appalachian State Mountaineers went into the Big House and defeated Michigan kind of started the door opening for Lloyd Carr to get on out of there. Speaking of Michigan, the Wolverines and the Fighting Irish, they squared off Saturday night. 24-17, Notre Dame wins that one. I don't really know what to say about either one of these two teams. Expectations high for both of these squads. Neither one of these teams did anything that really impressed me. To me, this was a painful game to watch.
It is, and it's really hard to believe that Harbaugh's only 9-9 his last 18 games. And his defenses have been great. His offenses have been abysmal. And they were not very good. And that's not to take anything away from Notre Dame, because Notre Dame played well. They were solid. But I saw a stat, and I don't have it in front of me now, but it's what Michigan is against ranked teams on the road, and it is unbelievable. It's 1-something or 0-for. It's very poor, and that's not the Michigan team we think of.
Not at all. And I think when Harbaugh came back, everyone expected Michigan to jump right back into the national title hunt immediately. And they've been up to the window, and they've kind of looked in, but they've never crawled inside and really got into the conversation. And a lot of that has to do with the fact is that they've had trouble beating Ohio State, which Harbaugh hasn't, and they've only beat Michigan State one time since he's been there, and that's when the Spartans were 3-9.
Right, and just a couple of years ago, if you recall, Michigan got a bad spot against Ohio State, and they didn't get a chance. They didn't win the East. They would have gone on to win the East and probably played in the playoffs. And, of course, then they got relegated to the Orange Bowl and lost to Florida State. But that was his best chance and his best team. And since that point, they've really been – they've underperformed for the most part.
Saturday night, Shea Patterson really didn't look like the answer at quarterback at Michigan, but it looks to me like LSU has found their quarterback. Ohio State transfer Joe Burrow starting in his first game for the Tigers, being a graduate transfer. He was not spectacular, but he was better than anything LSU's had at quarterback in recent memory. They get by Miami 33-17. The game wasn't that close.
No, it wasn't that close, and a couple of things to note. I noticed that last year it was Malik Rozier, and this year he's corrected people and said it's Rozier. He's a good player. Mm-hmm. I just think that LSU defense was so solid up front, and they kept pressuring the kid, and he's not he wasn't able to do much. He's got some weapons back, but LSU looked solid on both sides of the ball at the point of attack. And that's what LSU's known for. And again, I mention it often, LSU always has talent, and that's why there's more LSU players in the league, in the NFL, than any other school.
And we talked about the questions at running back, things like that Nick Brozet, that he answered the question for running back at LSU right now.
Right, that's number four, right?
Correct.
Yeah, they look like Alfred Blue back there, a little bit smaller version. But, no, he was solid. The offensive line played well. And I thought the defense played really well to only give up 17 points because, remember, it was 33-3, and the last two touchdowns were almost really just garbage touchdowns.
Oh, there's no question about that. The last two Miami touchdowns, or actually the only two Miami touchdowns, were scored in the fourth quarter. It was on LSU reserves. And, again, the game was decided 33-3 into the fourth quarter. LSU had that one wrapped up. Joe Burrow, I think, is going to be the difference in this LSU team this year. I've always thought when they had Fournette and going against these Alabama teams, just from a coaching standpoint, I said, the difference is they're stacking the box on Fournette because they know there's not a quarterback that can beat them back there. Alabama played man coverage across the board, and I don't care how great a running back you are, you're not going to run against a 9 and a 10-man front, especially a 9 and a 10-man front that's wearing crimson jerseys.
No, that's absolutely right. The biggest thing that the most – and I won't call it shocking, but the most surprising thing that I actually saw come to fruition that we've been told it's going to be done is LSU was up double digits, 20-plus points, and they're throwing the ball. And I'm not talking screen passes. And I was watching it with some colleagues, and I said, I haven't seen that. I can't remember the last time I saw LSU throw the ball with a big lead, and he was throwing it, and it was wide open underneath. Because LSU's not known to do that, and it was very effective.
No doubt about that. Last night, Virginia Tech, 24-3 over the Florida State Seminoles. Nothing could go right for the Seminoles last night.
No, and I had a lot of questions about Florida State. Would Taggart change that offense? Because all the players recruited are built for a pro-style offense that Fisher had put together. And I thought he made the right decision to go with keep everything in form and go with the pro-style offense. But they misfired at almost every opportunity. And then I could see the body language was very negative, and they didn't have confidence.
Cam Akers, the outstanding running back for Florida State. Now, he tore off that 85-yard run that got the Seminoles set up first and goal down inside the five, and just like with everything else, it backfired. They ended up fumbling the ball, got nothing out of it. But now, if you want to say something about this Hokie defense, Cam Akers, 14 carries, 82 yards. Now, remember, I just said he had an 85-yard run.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So now you look at that, you see the negative. Every carry that he had was negative except for that 85-yard run.
Right. And look, Virginia Tech, everyone, Bud Foster gets plenty of publicity. But also, Justin Fuente, remember when he was at Memphis, they would score a lot and the defense would give up a lot of points. Mm-hmm. But go back to just last year, Virginia Tech held several opponents to – 0, 10 points, less than 20 points a game. So the defense, to me, for Virginia Tech, that was a big test for them, and they passed it easily.
All right, Mike, this coming week, of course, Alabama has Arkansas State coming into town, and I'm not in no way predicting an upset or anything like that here, but I really think Arkansas State probably going to play Alabama a little bit tougher than Louisville did this past week. You've got Georgia, South Carolina, Clemson, Texas A&M. The only game that we have between highly ranked team, number 15 USC and number 13 Stanford, what games jump out to you right now that you're looking at?
I'm looking forward to watching the USC Stanford game and see where that point spread settles. Before I go on to next week, Coach, that stat I was looking for is Michigan is now 0-17 on the road against ranked opponents. So they've lost 17 straight road games when they play a good team, a ranked opponent. So wow. That's on Harbaugh, and I don't know how hot his seat is, but if that trend continues, it will continue to get hotter.
I totally agree there. All right, what about this coming week? What games jump out at you that that just kind of catch your eye right off the bat?
Well, that's that Pac-12 matchup we just talked about. And I know it's going to be, Oklahoma's going to be a huge favorite, but I'm interested to see the UCLA-Oklahoma game, not because I'm going to have a play on it or because I think it's going to be ultra entertaining. I want to see how the UCLA players react after that loss to Cincinnati. They have injuries. Their quarterback was hurt. So I'll keep an eye on that. A game that's a little bit off the radar. Some of our listeners might want to watch Memphis at Navy. Mm-hmm. I think that could be entertaining. And did you mention Georgia-South Carolina, Coach?
I did mention Georgia-South Carolina.
I think that can be a very interesting game with Georgia being a 9.5 or a 10-point favorite on the road. South Carolina may surprise some people there with playing that game close. And the other interesting matchup is Colorado-Nebraska, former Big 12 opponents, rivals, and Colorado, of course, now in the Pac-12 and Nebraska in the mm-hmm. Big Ten.
Scott Frost was supposed to get his opening day win versus Akron this past Saturday. However, thunderstorms kept that game from happening. It's now, you know, been canceled. They were trying to play it on Sunday like a lot of other schools were doing, but who got postponed from Saturday. There were like three or four games played on Sunday. However, just with travel arrangements, hotels, Akron was not able to pull it off. They had to go back to Ohio on that charter on Saturday evening. So that game has been canceled. So this is going to be Nebraska's first time out of the gate. Of course, Colorado has a game under their belt versus Colorado State, a big win there. And, you know, I think Colorado has a little bit of an advantage going into this game now.
I would agree, and the point spread says Colorado will win the game. And what I mean by that, for the listeners who haven't heard us talk about when the point spread speaks, Nebraska is a 5-point favorite at home. When you see a 5 or 5.5-point favorite in college football, the underdog wins at a high percentage, and they cover at a high percentage. And that's a tough spot because Nebraska, look, I think Scott Frost is an excellent coach, and I think in time he's going to be the man. But he has players that do not fit his system, and that's just the way it is.
All right, Mike, appreciate your time today, and look forward to having you back with us a little bit later on this week, and we'll delve into some NFL and more college football.
That's right. I enjoy it.
All right, Mike Benard from OTM Sports. Take a quick break. We'll be right back. GameDaySportsRadio.com. Won't you hop inside my car?